Since the world is not governed by chance, but by a divine ruler who does not change his purposes at random, men are alarmed at the extraordinary signs in the heavens, and ask with anxious hearts what events these may portend. The sun, first of stars, seems to have lost his wonted light, and appears of a bluish color. We marvel to see no shadows of our bodies at noon, to feel the mighty vigor of his heat wasted into feebleness, and the phenomena which accompany a transitory eclipse prolonged through a whole year. The moon, too, even when her orb is full, is empty of her natural splendor. Strange has been the course of the year so far. We have had a winter without storms, a spring without mildness, and a summer without heat. Whence can we look for harvest, since the months which should have been maturing the corn have been chilled by Boreas? How can the blade open if rain, the mother of fertility, is denied to it? These two influences, prolonged frost and unseasonable drought, must be adverse to all things that grow. The seasons seem to be all jumbled up together, and the fruits, which were wont to be formed by gentle showers, cannot be looked for from the parched earth. The middle air is thickened by the rigor of snow and rarefied by the beams of the sun. This is the great void, roaming between the heavens and the earth. This often happens in cloudy weather for a time. It is only its extraordinary prolongation which has produced these disastrous effects, causing the reaper to fear a new frost in harvest, making the apples to harden when they should grow ripe, souring the old age of the grape cluster. All this, however, though it would be wrong to construe it as an omen of divine wrath, cannot but have an injurious effect on the fruits of the earth. Let it be your care to see that the scarcity of this one year does not bring ruin on us all. Indeed, divine providence uses adversity as a means of testing our characters. Famine has afflicted the provinces, but the result of it has been that they have proved more fully than before the bounty of their king. Rejoice herein, O ye Ligurians, for when, as you will remember, on a previous occasion the savage temper of your neighbours was aroused, exult now, O province, adorned with the carcasses of thine adversaries. Rejoice, O Liguria, at the heap of dead bodies. If the harvest of corn is denied thee, the harvest of dead enemies shall not be wanting. Yellow dust rained down like snow. Then there came celestial ash so thick in places it could be scooped up in handfuls. In July it snowed, and in August there was a fall of frost which ruined the crops. So great is death by famine that by imperial decree there is an amnesty on all rents and taxes. And it came about during this year that a most dread portent took place. For the sun gave forth its light without brightness, like the moon, during this whole year, and it seemed exceedingly like the sun in eclipse, for the beams it shed were not clear, nor as it is accustomed to shed. And from the time when this thing happened, men were free neither from war, nor pestilence, nor any other thing leading to death. And it was the time when Justinian was in his 10th year of his reign. During these times there was a pestilence, by which the whole human race came near to being annihilated. Now in the case of all other scourges sent from heaven, some explanation of a cause might be given, such as the many theories propounded by those who are clever in these matters. But for this calamity it is quite impossible either to express in words or to conceive in thought any explanation, except indeed to refer it to God. For it did not come in a part of the world or upon certain men, nor did it confine itself to any season of the year, so that from such circumstances it might be possible to find subtle explanations of a cause. But it embraced the entire world, and blighted the lives of all men, though differing from one another in the most marked degree, respecting neither sex nor age. For much as men differ with regard to the places in which they live, or in the law of their daily life, or in whatever else man differs from man, in the case of this disease alone, the difference availed naught. and it detects some in the summer season, others in the winter, and still others at the other times of the year. Now let each one express his own judgment concerning the matter, but as for me, I shall proceed to tell where this disease originated and the manner in which it destroyed men. This disease always took its start from the coast, and from there went up to the interior, and in the second year it reached Byzantium in the middle of spring, where it happened that I was staying at the time, and it came as follows. Apparitions of supernatural beings in human guise of every description were seen by many persons, and those who encountered them thought that they were struck by the man they had met in this or that part of the body, and immediately upon seeing this apparition, they were seized also by the disease. Now at first, those who met these creatures tried to turn them aside by uttering the holiest of names and exorcising them in ways as well as each one could, but they accomplished absolutely nothing. For even in the sanctuaries where most of them fled for refuge, they were dying constantly. And later on, they were unwilling even to give heed to their friends when they called to them, and they shut themselves up in their rooms and pretended that they did not hear, although their doors were being beaten down, fearing, obviously, that he who was calling was one of the demons. But in the case of some of the pestilence did not come on in this way, they saw a vision in a dream and seemed to suffer the very same thing at the hands of the creature who stood over them, or else to hear a voice foretelling to them that they were written down in the number of those who were to die. But with the majority, it came about that they were seized by the disease without becoming aware of what was coming, either through a waking vision or a dream. And after, they were taken in the following manner. They had a sudden fever, some when just roused from sleep, others while walking about, and others while otherwise engaged, without any regard to what they were doing. And the body showed no change from its previous colour, nor was it hot as might be expected when attacked by a fever, nor indeed did any inflammation set in. But the fever was of such a languid sort that its commencement, and up till evening, that neither to the sick themselves nor to a physician who touched them would it afford any suspicion of danger. It was natural, therefore, that not one of those who had contracted the disease expected to die from it. But on the same day in some cases, in others on the following day, and in the rest not many days after, a bubonic swelling developed below the abdomen, and also inside the armpit, and in some cases also beside the ears, and at different points on the thighs. Up to this point then, everything went in about the same way with all who had taken the disease. But from then on, very marked differences developed, and I am unable to say whether the cause of this diversity of symptoms was to be found in the difference in bodies, or in the fact that it followed the wish of him who brought the disease into the world. For there ensued with some a deep coma, with others a violent delirium, and in either case they suffered the characteristic symptoms of the disease. Those who were under the spell of the coma forgot all those who were familiar to them, and seemed to be sleeping constantly, and if anyone cared for them, they would eat without waking. But some were also neglected, and these would die directly through lack of sustenance. But those who were seized with delirium suffered from insomnia and were victims of a distorted imagination, for they suspected that men were coming upon them to destroy them, and they would become excited and rush off in flight, crying out at the top of their voices. And those who were attending them were in a state of constant exhaustion and had a most difficult time of it throughout. For this reason, everybody pitied them no less than the sufferers. Not because they were threatened by the pestilence in going near it, for neither physicians nor other persons were found to contract this malady through contact with the sick or with the dead, for many who were constantly engaged either in burying or attending those in no way connected with them held out in the performance of this service beyond all expectation. While with many others the disease came on without warning and they died straight away, but they pitied them because of the great hardships which they were undergoing. For when the patients fell from their beds and lay rolling on the floor, they kept patting them back in place, and when they were struggling to rush headlong out of their houses, they would have to force them back by shoving and pulling against them. And when water chanced to be near, they wished to fall into it, not so much because of a desire to drink, for most of them rushed into the sea, but the cause was to be found chiefly in the diseased state of their minds. and in those cases where neither coma nor delirium came on, the bubonic swelling became mortified, and the sufferer, no longer able to endure the pain, died. And one would suppose that in all cases the same thing would have been true, but since they were not at all in their senses, some were quite unable to feel the pain, for owing to the troubled condition of their minds, they lost all sense of feeling. Now some of the physicians, who were at a loss because the symptoms were not understood, supposing that the disease centered on the bubonic swellings, decided to investigate the bodies of the dead, and upon opening some of the swellings, they found a strange sort of carbuncle that had grown inside them. With many, also a vomiting of blood ensued without visible cause and straightaway brought death. Moreover, I'm able to declare this, that the most illustrious physicians predicted that many would die, who unexpectedly escaped entirely from suffering shortly afterwards, and that they declared many would be saved, who were destined to be carried off almost immediately. So it was that in this disease there was no cause which came within the province of human reasoning, for in all cases the issue tended to be something unaccountable. For example, while some were helped in bathing, others were harmed in no less degree, and of those who received no care, many died, but others, contrary to reason, were saved. Suffering came without warning, and recovery was due to no external cause. Now in the cases where the swelling rose to an unusual size and a discharge of pus had set in, it came about that they escaped from the disease and survived, for clearly the acute condition of the carbuncle had found relief in this direction, and this proved to be in general an indication of returning health. But in cases where the swelling preserved its former appearance, there ensued those troubles which I have just mentioned. And with some of them, it came about that the thigh was withered. With others who survived, the tongue did not remain unaffected, and they lived on either lisping or speaking incoherently and with difficulty. It all started with the Egyptians who dwell in Pelusium. Then it divided and moved in one direction towards Alexandria and the rest of Egypt, and in the other direction it came to Palestine. And from there it spread over the whole world, always moving forward and travelling at times favourable to it. For it seemed to move by fixed arrangement, and to tarry for a specified time in each country, casting its blight slightingly upon none, but spreading in either direction right out to the ends of the world. For it left neither island, nor cave, nor mountain ridge which had human inhabitants, and if it had passed by any land, either not affecting the men there or touching them in indifferent fashion, still, at a later time, it came back. Now the disease in Byzantium ran a course of 4 months, and its greatest virulence lasted about 3, and at first the deaths were little more than normal, then the mortality rate rose still higher, and afterwards the tale of dead reached 5,000 each day, and again it even came to 10,000, and still more than that. Now in the beginning, each man attended to the burial of the dead in his own house, and these they threw even into the tombs of others, either by escaping detection or using violence. But afterwards, confusion and disorder everywhere became complete. Slaves remained destitute of masters, and men who in former times were very prosperous were deprived of the service of their domestics, who were either sick or dead, and many houses became completely destitute of human inhabitants. Indeed, for this reason it came about that some of the notable men of the city, because of the universal destitution, remained unburied for many days. And so it fell to the lot of the emperor, as was natural, to make provision for the trouble. He therefore detailed soldiers from the palace and distributed money, and by giving out the emperor's money and by making further expenditures from his own purse, kept burying the bodies which were not cared for. And when it came about that all the tombs which had existed previously were filled up with dead, then they dug up all the places about the city one after the other, laid the dead there, each one as he could, and departed. But later on, those who were making these trenches, no longer able to keep up with the number of the dying, mounted the towers of the fortifications, and tearing off the roofs threw the bodies in there in complete disorder, and they piled them up just as each one happened to fall, and filled practically all the towers with corpses, and then covered them again with their roofs. As a result of this, an evil stench pervaded the city and distressed the inhabitants still more, and especially whenever the wind blew fresh from that quarter. At that time, all the customary rites of burial were overlooked, for the dead were not carried out escorted by a procession in the customary manner, nor were the usual chants sung over them. But it was sufficient if one carried on his shoulders the body of one of the dead to the parts of the city which bordered on the sea, and flung him down, and there the corpses would be thrown upon skiffs in a heap, to be conveyed wherever it might chance. At that time too, those of the population who had formerly been members of the factions laid aside their mutual enmity, and in common they attended to the burial rites of the dead, and they carried with their own hands the bodies of those who were no connections of theirs, and buried them. Nay more, those who in times past used to take delight in devoting themselves to pursuits both shameful and base, shook off the unrighteousness of their daily lives and practiced the duties of religion with diligence. Not so much because they'd learnt wisdom at last, nor because they'd become all of a sudden lovers of virtue, as it were, but then all, so to speak, being thoroughly terrified by the things which were happening, and supposing that they would die immediately, did, as was natural, learn respectability for a season, by sheer necessity. For one could insist emphatically, without falsehood, that this disease, whether by chance or by some providence, chose out with exactitude the worst men and let them go free. During that time, it seemed no easy thing to see any man in the streets of Byzantium, but all who had the good fortune to be in health were sitting in their houses, either attending to the sick or mourning the dead. And if one did succeed in meeting a man going out, he was carrying one of the dead. And work of every description ceased, and all the trades were abandoned by the artisans, and all other work as well, such as each had in hand. Indeed, in a city which was simply abounding in all good things, starvation, almost absolute, was running riot. Certainly it seemed a difficult and very notable thing to have a sufficiency of bread or of anything else, so that with some of the sick it appeared that the end of life came about sooner than it should have come by reason of the lack of the necessities of life. To put all in a word, it was not possible to see a single man in Byzantium clad in the chlamys, and especially when the emperor became ill, for he too had a swelling of the groin. But in a city which held dominion over the whole Roman Empire, every man was wearing clothes befitting private station, and remaining quietly at home. Such was the course of the pestilence in the Roman Empire at large, as well as in Byzantium, and it fell also upon the land of the Persians, and visited all other barbarians besides. In the year 848 of the Syrian era, an event occurred that is beyond belief. Had I not known about it from many different writings, I myself would not have included it. The sun was eclipsed for 18 months. For 3 hours in the morning it would give light, but a light that resembled neither day nor night. During that year, fruit did not reach the point of maturity, and all the land became as though transformed into something half alive, or like someone suffering from a long illness. An unprecedented plague ensued, which began in Constantinople, where the first day 5,000 people died, the next day 10,000, the third 15,000, the fourth 18,000, figures reported by the auditors that the emperor had placed at the gates of the city. They counted up to 300,000 dead, and then left off counting. The epidemic first attacked the poor class of the population, then the merchants, and the nobility, including the imperial palace. The trouble began with a wound that formed in the palm of the hand and progressed until the afflicted one could not take a step. The legs swelled, then the buboes burst and pus came out. The city began to stink from the unburied corpses, and so the bodies were thrown into the sea, but they kept resurfacing. Indeed, the emperor ordered people to be paid who would carry a corpse out of town, but often the bearers themselves fell down in the street. Indeed, it even happened that someone would enter a deserted house and gather up its treasures to steal, but would end up dying at the door on the way out. The plague spread to Egypt, where one city was wiped out in this manner, Only 7 men and a boy remained alive there. As they wandered around the city, suddenly the 7 men died on the spot. Then the lad saw the angel of God in the guise of an old man. Seeing the child weeping, the angel removed him from the city and said, "Go now and weep not, for this punishment is the payment for heresy and sin."